And the biggest thing is for stroke and traumatic brain injury individuals, a thing called neuroplasticity. It is the brain's ability to rewire itself every 90 days, and it doesn't stop until the day that we die. And that is a gift that we can make use of and go from, well, being considered I was going to be a couch potato to someone who is now out there and helping people and painting and crocheting and walking my dog and playing in my garden. There is no limit to what you can't do. I still walk with a cane, a quad cane, because it stands up.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Limitless Living Show. Chuck Anderson here, and this is the show where we share stories of personal transformation and overcoming limitations. And the idea here is to inspire you on your journey, whatever you might be experiencing in your life, and we want to inspire you to live with joy and happiness and fulfillment. And really, that's what these stories are all about. And today we have a great guest for you. Not only does she have an amazing story of transformation, but just like so many others that we've interviewed, now is engaged in the type of work that helps others on their journey as well. Especially in the areas of health. And if you know anyone who's experienced a stroke or, brain injury of any kind, this is the kind of person you want to really lean into this story and everything she's experienced and what she's doing now, which is really, really cool. So I have Jan Burrell here with me today. Jan, welcome to the program.
Hello, Chuck. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I know we're both excited to do this, and I've been your story is fascinating, and it's one that I think is inspiring as well. So, without further ado, Jan, I think the best place to start is, what's your story?
My story. I was a farmer. I was doing six farmers markets a week. I was doing all the baking, vegetables, and God said enough. And one day I was walking into the house to get some fruit to make some coffee cakes, and my world stopped. It literally stopped. I fell to the floor, called my son, called my then partner, and then blacked out. I had had a hemorrhagic stroke, which is a brain bleed. And I got flown over to the hospital in Burlington in a helicopter, something I've always wanted to ride in, and I don't even remember it. Can you believe it? Mm. But when I woke up 3 days later, I woke up to my daughter who had flown in from Colorado, and basically, I couldn't speak. My cognitive abilities were really messed up. If you showed me a tree and asked me what it was, I'd say banana or something like that. It just didn't make sense. I couldn't walk. My arm didn't work. And I was having problems with... I was stubborn and I wanted to do everything for myself. So I fell off the toilet 3 times. I fell out of bed. But I was stubborn. Doctors came in and said I had wiped out so much of my brain. Basically, all my prime real estate was gone. And they didn't have much hope for me recovering. But I was still stubborn and I still tried. I got let out of rehab after 6 weeks, came home, did rehab in home for about 2 more months until I could walk enough that I could get into the ride that they provided for me, my health insurance, and go to physical therapy. But even then, they didn't give me much hope. I tried, and I did as much as I could then, but I was still having problems speaking. aphasia is something that affects, I'd say, 99% of all stroke patients at some way, in some degree. So my rehab stopped because my insurance only covered so much. So I kept working at home on doing things, on moving, on keeping my arm stretched out so it would be able to freely move if I ever get it back. And I decided that I was going to go back to work. So I went back to school as a substitute teacher and an interim teacher. I couldn't read. I was having problems talking, and the kids, I love the kids. I had worked at this school for 15 years, and they took me under their wing and helped me learn to read again. They would find me and write the teacher's notes on the board for the classes. And when they were in class, instead of reading silently, they would read out loud and make sure I was following along. I can't thank these kids, those kids enough for everything that they did, including walking around with me so I could increase my walking abilities. But then COVID hit, I was laid off and went back to college for my master's degree, which I earned summa cum laude in English and in creative writing and poetry. I love poetry. I got out, I became an associate production editor of a magazine that has since closed down due to the strife in their country. But it was quite an experience of learning. And while I was in college, I wrote a book for a Halloween story competition that they had. Of course, didn't win. But I said, I want to do something with this book. And I rewrote it and submitted it to an editor who thought it was a really good idea. So Tiffy's New Friend came about because of that. As you can see, there's a dragon. And my dog, if you look very closely, you can see the dog sitting up front. Tiffy is the dog. And the second book is coming out October 10th. Tiffy Goes to California. But something I didn't do, I mean, a crochet. This is Tippy and Saren the Dragon from my book. But I loved to paint. And it was something I excelled at. Here's one of my paintings from when I was normal. Landscapes. And I did lighthouses for my dad, who loved them and lived on the Hudson River. But I didn't paint. I just couldn't see myself painting because I had to learn how to rewrite because I was right-handed. And with that side gone, it was the left side that had to do everything. And a friend of mine, Mark Harder, invited me to a painting class. This was about 3-4 months ago. And I did this. I love sheep. And I thought, well, it's not quite the caliber that I did before, but that's okay. And I'm still doing it. And you could see I have done this is watching the sunrise. And then I decided I would try something abstract. So I did a tree with abstract colors behind, kind of like fall colors. So there really isn't anything you can't do if you try. You just got to believe in yourself. And the biggest thing is for stroke and traumatic brain injury individuals, a thing called neuroplasticity. It is the brain's ability to rewire itself every 90 days, and it doesn't stop until the day that we die. And that is a gift that we can make use of and go from, well, being considered I was going to be a couch potato to someone who is now out there and helping people and painting and crocheting and walking my dog and playing in my garden. There is no limit to what you can't do. I still walk with King. a quad cane because it stands up. I got tired of picking the other one up all the time. My arm still doesn't work, but that's okay. I do everything left-handed. So when I go out to the garden, I hobble out with my cane and go out and play with my flowers. Mm-hmm. I have set up 136 geranium starts for next year when we open our farm stand. Again, my son is here helping me with things now. He and his fiance live over in the apartment that's attached to my house, which is nice to have somebody here for me.
You know, one of the things that I really take away from what you have shared, first of all, you know, tremendous story of resilience, I think, because you've got the doctors telling you that, okay, there's nothing there's nothing we can do. You know, brain is too far gone. And then, but here you are doing all of the things that you did before. Okay, albeit not the same way, but you're not letting it stop you. First of all, I just think that is a tremendous attitude. What was there like a turning point or a decision or something? I mean, you've got the doctors telling you this, but, and like you said, couch potato, you very well could have listened to them and became a couch potato, but you didn't. So what was it? What was the thing that moved you away from what you're being told into what you're doing now?
Well, I did sit as a couch potato for a while, and it was very hard because I have ADHD and I like to be up and doing things. But I didn't give myself enough credit until I went back to work. And those kids motivated me because they were always asking me, how's your arm doing? How's your leg doing? How's your talking doing? And they pushed me to try to better myself. And I know that was my turning point, because up till then I was fighting depression. I was fighting, why did I have to live through this just to be a drain on everybody? And being able to work again and be with those kids made it all clear that I didn't have to be that way. I didn't have to be so handicapped. I am not handicapped. I am disabled. But at that point, I was handicapped because my brain didn't work, my body didn't work, and my mind, what was left of it, was saying, forget it. It's just not worth it.
So we were talking about before this, you know, some of the work that you do now with coaching other people who are going through this journey right now. And I was sharing with you, first of all, I just think it's amazing and I've heard so many of these stories now that what I love so much about it is that you go through your journey and now, you're on the other side of that. And then there's this thought of, oh, you know what? I'm going to help others that are on this journey. So what was the point where you decided to do that? And, you know, what are some of the ways that you are helping? And so was there a point where you're saying, I mean, what was the opportunity? How did you find yourself helping others that are going through this as well?
I went to a boot camp, Corey Poirier's boot camp. And I had one gentleman say to me, why don't you get on podcasts and tell your story? So I got on podcasts, and then the podcast hosts started asking me, are you a coach? And I said, a coach? What's a coach? I thought, I can't teach football or anything anymore. But they described it to me, and I started looking around, and I was interested in the NLP, it's neuro-linguistic programming. So I got my certificate in that. Then I found another one where they covered all sorts of modalities. And at the end, you got certified as an expert coach. So I have both those modalities. I'm working on breath work. And even for the people who just want to hang out and see and read, I have a Facebook stroke page private where I do motivational pieces and I tell them snippets about what I teach in my courses or for my clients and all sorts of neat ideas. And I even, if they have kids and want the kids to be with them, I read stories and poetry and kids and nursery rhymes. And I also do motivational pieces that go to many different groups. So that was actually, podcasting was what got me into it.
Mm. That is a very unique, I think, origin story. I talk to a lot of coaches. I've been surrounded by coaches for 20 plus years, as I'm a coach as well in both life coaching and business coaching. And I've heard a lot of origin stories, and podcasting was definitely not one of them. Corey's amazing. I'm not surprised, you know, that you not only learned a lot there, but were surrounded by incredible people, because I know he always attracts incredible people to his events. And so that's very cool. So what now? So I guess the question is, what primarily do you, are you helping with, just so that if anyone's listening in and, you know, let's say they have a family member who's experiencing this, how can you help?
Well, basically, that's why I don't just do stroke and traumatic brain injury individuals. I also make sure that the coach, that the loved ones are included, as well as the caregivers, because as a stroke individual who had to go it alone, I want to make sure that nobody else goes it alone, because it needs to be a group effort. So I set aside time for the stroke or the traumatic brain injury person, and I set special time away for the loved ones and the caregivers in case they have questions, or if their loved one is unable to express what's going on, I can help with that too, so they can understand a little bit more of why the angers, why the temper tantrums, why the moods when they don't want to be around you. Basically, if they start arguing, I tell the caregiver or the loved one, look at them, say, I love you, but I'm leaving, and walk out of the room and let them be. And they'll usually come back to it. And I also teach breath work, because it is so important, not only for the individual that's the main client, but for a caregiver and loved ones to be able to calm themselves down instead of reacting with that person. It helps that greatly.
Yeah, so it sounds like really support for, you know, the person who's going through it, but support for the family, support for the caregivers, because, you know, difficult journey. It's going to have lots of ups and downs. It's going to have those emotional moments, and you're able to help with that. And we have, you know, still some more to talk about, but I want to just make sure that we remind our guests that your contact information is beneath this video if you're watching this on video. And if you are listening to this on podcast, you can connect with Jan. All her links are there, to her Facebook and to our website. And you've also written books. And so I want to talk a little bit about the books that you've written, because I think those are very inspiring and very helpful, especially to children. You want to talk a little bit about the books that you've been writing?
Sure. In the first book, a lonely dragon is looking for friendship, and she sees all these dragon figurines in the garden, so she comes closer and becomes friends with a high school social studies teacher, Lana, who has had a stroke, and her dog. And what she does is take them on an amazing flight of fancy where they go across lands, across countries, all the way over the sea to Norway, and then back across the ocean. And the neat thing about this is there is a map in the back of the book, and the kids can literally draw the flight plan, the way where they flew, and get to start recognizing land masses and where they are and in comparison to where we are. And the second book, Tippy Goes to California, it tells all about neat places in California, from the glass beach to the sequoia trees. And they even go belly sliding, dragon belly sliding, that is, at a ski slope. My aphasia, you can catch on because sometimes I can't think of words right away, or sometimes my speech is not as clear as it should be. And that is very much part of what the stroke people deal with. So that's why I make sure it never gets cut out, so you actually see the real me and see that it is possible to get through everything and put yourself out there and help other people. Mm-hmm. Because so many lose hope, and it's so sad.
You mentioned before the episode, obviously, writing the books, but I think you had mentioned something about how reading the books out loud is very beneficial to you. Can you talk a little bit about that in terms of how has that helped you as a, you know, stroke survivor, and how has that played a role in your journey?
Well, I love to read, and I read so many books I can't even tell you. And losing that ability to read was terrible. It was crushing. But nothing made sense. And I couldn't write, so I started in kindergarten. You learn your letters, so I would write my letters over and over again. And then I started getting board books. They were my kids' board books. I get them out, C, cat, you know, D, dog. And I would say the words, and I could see the picture and the word, so that started to help my cognitive abilities. And I worked my way up, first graders, second grade readers, third grade readers. And after 3.5 years, I read Christopher Paolini's Brisinger. He did the series Aragon, which was also with a dragon, although the movies didn't go beyond the first book. But it was about a 400-page book, big, big book, and took me a year to do it. But I got through it, and I've been reading nonstop since then.
So, you know, some of my takeaways from this, Jen, is don't take no for an answer, right? And, you know, these are themes that come up again and again in various stories. Not taking no for an answer. Don't let what other people say to you dictate your future. You didn't listen to the doctors. You created a new life for yourself.
But I believed in myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, talk a little bit about that. I mean, what did it just automatically come from within, or was there a process? Because, you know, people hear that, and of course they're going through whatever difficult thing they're going through. And of course, well-meaning people like me say, well, believe in yourself. And they're like, well, it's easy for you to say. What was your process like, or that journey of believing in yourself and not listening to what everyone is telling you, but, you know, really deciding for yourself what you were going to do?
This gets into a very strange area that the doctors have no idea why this happened. The pathway from my brain to my hand still worked. So I couldn't write, but I could type on my phone. Mm. I couldn't read what I was writing, but I knew what I was writing. So I started taking notes, what I had done that day and what I had done that month. And if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't have realized how far I've come. And the small steps, even 1% a day, if you add it up, becomes 365% better after a year. So what I would recommend to everybody is, if you are a stroke patient and can't write, get someone to write for you and write down what you've done. Don't have to make it beautiful and flowery, but just have it so that you can look back and say, oh, wow, last year I couldn't move my wrist and now I'm moving it. That's neat. Or, gee, when I started, my face was down and I couldn't move it. And now I can move it. I'm using muscles I didn't know about. And that has worked its way into what is becoming a book about my recovery and just the little things, and then finding positive sayings online would help if I was having a bad day, or finding things about my recovery that the doctors hadn't told me. I'd put that in there because that was important for me to know as well. There's so much that the doctors don't know about our minds. It's not, I'm never saying the doctors don't know what they're doing. They do. But our mind is the final frontier of unknown capacity, and it is amazing. And you just have to believe that it's going to work out. It's going to happen. And when I heard about that word, neuroplasticity, it was like a door opened and the sunlight came through. And I said, I knew it. I knew it. And I kept going, because they tell you after 6 months to a year, you're done. You're not going to improve after that. But you can.
And yet you're still improving.
I am.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of that has to do because you believe you can. And, you know, this is where we've had a lot of conversations about on the show and in the work that we do about the power of the mind and belief. And there's different applications of that. Some people are applying that to goals, and some people are applying that to learning how to walk again. And, you know, it really is that belief. And one of the things that I heard you say, which I think is a really big takeaway, is having that journal, having that way of recording what is happening. Okay, you might not be able to write it, but you can type it. It's still keeping track of your progress. Now, we're talking about that in terms of your recovery, but couldn't anyone do that in whatever journey they're on, right? And yeah. Pursuit of a goal is, and I remember one of my mentors used to do this thing. It was called the goal clearing exercise. And when it was the unrealized goal clearing exercise. And when we try to do something and we don't achieve it, it's like this weight that is on our shoulders. And we carry that around with us all the time. And so what he would have us do is journal all of the things that we did do in pursuit of that bigger goal. And when you really get into it, it's a really long list. And, you know, so many of us walk around feeling unsuccessful, but how successful are you? Like, look at these things that I'm doing daily, and those are adding up to something big down in the future. And as you were sharing your story, I had that flash to how amazing is that? You can take it literal to your recovery story, but I think it's something that anyone can use in their journey.
Yes, because you're adding things every day that you couldn't do before and you didn't realize it. And you're putting it there and you say, oh, wow, I can do that now. I couldn't do that before. Cool. So journaling is such an important thing.
Yeah. Well, take podcasting, for example. Once upon a time, you had never done it before. Once upon a time, I had never done it before. And yet here we are. And so we get to have that on our list. Jan, this has been amazing. And this, I just am so inspired by your story and your journey. And you've got so many cool things happening. We look forward to hearing about the book, about your recovery when that is ready. Please let us know about that. In the meantime, we've got all of Jan's links beneath this video and in the podcast. Please do reach out and connect with her. Jan, any final words of wisdom or piece of advice you want to leave our audience with before we close out this episode?
Make every day an exceptional day.
Beautiful words. Beautiful words. And that is so true. Jan, thank you. This has been amazing. And to our audience, thank you as well. Hopefully you have found this as inspiring as I have. And look, you know, keep moving forward. And writing your story of personal transformation and overcoming the limitations in your life so you can live a life full of joy and happiness and fulfillment. And that's really what this is all about. So until next time, this has been the Limitless Living Show with Chuck Anderson. My guest has been Jan Burrell, and we'll see you on the next one. Thank you.